Thank you for listening to Coffee at KYUK. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation held a virtual town hall last night to answer the region's questions about the coronavirus pandemic. We're airing a portion of that town hall today. Panelists included YKHC President and CEO Dan Winkleman, YKHC Chief of Staff Dr. Ellen Hodges, YKHC Infection Prevention Physician Dr. Elizabeth Bates, Alaska Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink, ANMC Acting Administrator Dr. Bob Onders, and AVCP President Vivian Corthius. The event was moderated by YKHC Communications Director Tiffany Zolkuski. YKHC Chief of Staff Dr. Ellen Hodges speaks first about the state of the pandemic in the region.
So right now, our case rates overall for our region are about 273 per 100,000. And if you split that out from our census areas, our Kuslavac census area has a case rate slightly higher of 455 per 100,000. And if you split that out further, just the city of Bethel, our case rates are 475 per 100,000. So we have some pretty high case rates here. And I will hand it over to Dr. Zink.
Great. Thank you so much for the question. And thank you for everyone tuning in tonight. So I appreciate the question about influenza versus COVID. There are some similarities in the sense that they both enter via our lungs and they're both shed by respiratory droplets, things that kind of spread by coughing and sneezing and spitting. But there's a lot of differences between them. And so COVID-19 is spread by a virus called SARS-CoV-2 that is quite contagious. It's more contagious than the flu. It spreads before you know that you have symptoms, even more so than the flu. So 2 days prior to symptoms starting, and up to about 40% of people can feel totally fine, yet they have the virus that causes COVID and they can spread it to other people. The incubation period, the time it takes to start to show symptoms, is also longer. So for influenza, it takes about 2 days from the time you've been exposed to start to show symptoms. For COVID, it takes about 5 days, but it can take anywhere from 2 to 14 days to start to show symptoms. So it's a really long incubation period, or that period of time it takes to grow, and then you can spread it to others. So it can be much harder to track and know where it's coming from. And we also see that it very easily moves between person to person, particularly when people are in closed indoor spaces, particularly when someone's sick. And that's the reason for wearing a mask, as well as keeping our distance and minimizing our spread. We also see that it affects us differently. And so COVID can cause blood clots in the heart, the lungs. And we're learning a lot about the long-term effects of COVID that do look different than influenza. So much more to learn, but that's a brief overview of the difference. The only other last thing I would say is that both of these diseases do affect those who are older and those who are immunocompromised. But a big difference is that influenza also affects young children. If you're between the ages of 1 and 15, you're less likely to die from COVID than influenza. But every age after age 15, you're more likely to die from COVID than influenza. And that increases with every age of your life. So after age 15, COVID is more lethal than influenza. Thank you.
So one question that we received tonight is there any data of reinfection of COVID-19 in Alaska? And if so, how does it compare to the first experience?
Yes, that's a great question. So maybe I'll start and hand it over to Dr. Joe McLaughlin. We have had cases of reinfection. If someone is past 90 days and develops symptoms, we treat it like you haven't had it before. We're still learning a lot about the immunity of the disease. But we've had both individual Alaskans as well as healthcare workers test positive again. But Dr. Joe McLaughlin, you want to expand on that?
Sure. I think it's really important to underscore that fortunately, what we're seeing not only here in Alaska, but nationally, is that reinfection is rare. It's a very uncommon occurrence. It does happen, but it's rare. So one of the things that we're on the lookout for is that the rate of reinfection might start to increase over time. As people's immune system sort of wanes, the memory from the prior infection starts to wane. We don't know when that's going to happen. It could be that reinfection rates will start to increase after 6 months. Could be that they'll start to increase after a year. We just don't know, but that's something we're on the lookout for.
Great. Another question here is, what percentage of hospitalizations due to COVID-19 in Alaska are patients with underlying conditions?
Yeah, so we did look at a hospital bulletin recently that looked at our hospitalizations and deaths. It's important to remember that approximately 71% of Alaskans are either over the age of 65 or have an underlying health condition related to COVID. So it's not a small percentage of our population.
Great, thank you so much. A question here is, for those of us in rural villages, what kind of medical procedures are considered essential for travel to Bethel or Anchorage for advanced care? Dr. Hodges and maybe Dr. Anders?
Hi, this is Dr. Hodges. I can give a first stab at that. So we're encouraging people to continue to get medical care that would be considered emergency or urgent. If it's a life-threatening condition, obviously, we really want people to seek care for that. Or if your health might worsen in the subsequent few days, we are encouraging people to seek care for that. We're encouraging our patients to keep as many telehealth visits as they possibly can. And we do appreciate the cooperation from Dr. Anders and the specialists at ANMC to really pivot to doing visits by phone or by video for the people in our outlying areas who have trouble traveling. But ultimately, consulting with the community health aide and with the providers here in Bethel, we can help make that decision about what's worthwhile to travel. And I don't know if Dr. Anders wants to talk a little bit about surgery at ANMC, because I know that has been an issue recently.
Sure, thank you. And I agree with everything Dr. Hodges said. Anything that we can do via phone or telemedicine, we're trying to pivot and offer it in that manner. Other potential needs to travel into Anchorage, I think it is a kind of a shared decision-making with the providers and the people that are being served by the community. At ANMC, we're looking at any procedure, surgery procedures that can be delayed for 30 days safely, that we would like to delay them and reschedule them if possible. So we're looking to do that. We have to have a communication with the individual who's being treated. There are some conditions that are not urgent or emergent, but you can't necessarily wait 30 days in order to get it done. So we are managing those on a case-by-case basis.
And then I would just add, from a state perspective, we continue to look at availability resources, trying to help to build additional resources and capacity and care. There have been some times when some patients have needed to transfer from the YK region into Fairbanks instead of Anchorage when they were really full. But we are seeing the entire country right now surge, and that is causing shortages of staffing as well as limited resources. And so from a state perspective, trying to do all that we can to build that up so that anyone who needs care is able to get the care that they need.
All right, a question here for Dr. Hodges or Dr. Bates and Dan. There are a couple questions related to capacity within YKHC clinics. Is YKHC able to obtain therapeutic medication for individuals who are infected with COVID? Also, do village clinics have enough oxygen available for people who may need it?
I can take a stab at answering that question. We have been getting enough of the medication that we use to treat hospitalized inpatients for COVID. That's primarily our dexamethasone, which is a steroid that is useful in the treatment of hospitalized COVID patients, and remdesivir, which is an IV medication that's administered, that is for hospitalized patients. And we have had a good supply of both of those medications. As far as the villages and oxygen supplies, we work with each village on a daily and weekly basis to make sure they have enough oxygen cylinders in the village to handle someone who needs more oxygen than the oxygen concentrator. So the oxygen, each village has a machine that can concentrate oxygen and provide enough oxygen for most of our patients. But for the patients who need a little more oxygen, we have to have cylinders to do that. And we have, so we coordinate with them on a daily basis to make sure everybody has enough oxygen and ship out more as needed.
Another question here, if you have been positive and have had some symptoms and are better, can you get COVID again?
Sure, this is Joe.
Go for it, Joe.
Joe McLaughlin, I can maybe start with that one. So that's the same thing as reinfection. That's what we just talked about. And that is, if you're positive, if you have symptoms of COVID now, and then you get better, and usually most people get better within about a week or so, and then let's say a month or two down the road, could you potentially get COVID again? The answer is yes, but your chances are low of getting COVID again within, you know, a couple, 2-3 months. They're very low. It does happen, but it's quite rare. But after 3 months, the risk of reinfections appears to go up. And so the more time that goes between your original infection and re-exposure to the virus, the increase the risk of reinfection. But again, so far what we're seeing on a national level is reinfection is rare, even months after the original.
Another question here, a question related to if a household member of a known positive needs to quarantine if they have tested negative. Can you talk a bit about quarantine requirements in a household with multiple individuals where one might be positive and one might be negative?
Yes. Okay. So that person would need to quarantine. Let's just take an example. Let's take this group here that's on the panel, and we're all living in a household. And let's say I test positive today. If I'm testing positive today and I've had close contact with everybody on this panel in the household at some point over the last 2 days, then everybody in this panel would need to be in quarantine. And the quarantine would be for 14 days, starting at the most recent close contact exposure, within 2 days prior to my testing positive or my illness onset. So that's the situation. Now for me, I'm sick. I know that I've got COVID. I just tested positive today. And let's say my symptoms started today. I got a rapid test. And so my period of infectiousness would go back 2 days ago. That means that anybody I was exposed to starting 2 days ago, that I was in close contact with starting 2 days ago, up until now, those people would need to be in quarantine. And the quarantine period is 14 days. Now, I'm sick with COVID, and as long as my symptoms get better over the next week or so, I can come out of isolation after 10 days. But everybody else on this panel would need to stay in quarantine for 14 days. So quarantine is for people who have been exposed but haven't yet tested positive. We don't know that they're infected. That's 14 days. For people who are infected, they stay in isolation for at least 10 days. And most people can come out after 10 days. So hopefully that answers that question.
If I may add just one kind of additional point there. So that reason for that kind of longer period for quarantine, that 14, is we got to wait for that incubation period that we had talked about previously. That's what, you know, Dan had asked about at the beginning. And I really want to also emphasize the point of, say we're not all in the same household, but we just recently saw each other. So say I just had a contact with Joe and he's positive, and there was that risk, there wouldn't be any benefit for me for getting tested tonight or tomorrow, because it takes a while for that virus to grow. And so usually between days kind of 5 and 7 would be the best time to grow. So I don't want someone to think that they have a negative test and they're in a household and they're a close contact to assume that they don't have COVID and they couldn't be spreading it to others. It may not be enough time yet. And so that's why there's not a test-based strategy right now to shorten that period. And it takes a while after exposure to grow the virus. So I just wanted to kind of emphasize that point as well.
Thanks. I think that's really important, Dr. Zink, and it might be the heart of the question. I kind of missed it. So yeah, as Dr. Zink said, there's no way to test your way out of a quarantine. So if in the scenario that I gave, I'm infected and I've exposed everybody on this panel, even if they test negative a week from now, they still have to be in quarantine for a full 14 days.
And hi, this is Dr. Hodges. I'd like to add a little something that might be a little bit different that we do out here. So if you have a household where that person can't isolate in themselves from other people in the household, so in other words, they have ongoing exposure for that full 10 days that they're in isolation, the quarantine period for that household doesn't start until day 10. And then they have a 14 days after that. So that's an important thing to know, that in households where the person can't stay away from everyone else in the house, they have to stay in the same house, it's a kid, or there's no other place for them to go in the house to be away from everyone, you have to start the quarantine on day 10. So that's a 24 days of everyone kind of hunkering down in the house and not leaving.
And then a mask in the household can minimize transmission. And so that's the other thing. There was a study that showed that you had a 79% decrease in transmission if people were wearing masks in the household. So if someone tests positive, have everyone wearing the mask even in the household to help protect those who are not positive yet, to help decrease that transmission in your house.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's really important, because we've actually had some households out here that one person had tested positive, but they're able to isolate them in one room, and then everyone else had masks on when they shared the bathroom, then they cleaned the bathroom after that person had exited, and they were able to not get sick. And so that's, I think, a really important message that it's not like everyone's going to get sick in the same household, although we have been seeing that profusely. But there is an opportunity, there is a chance still there that people, if you're able to mask up, they're able to sleep in another room, and then you can keep masks on, if there's a good chance that you will not get everyone sick in the house.
One question, Dr. Hodges, Dr. Bates, we've had a spike of cases in our village and have initiated a lockdown. How long should we be in lockdown?
Hi, this is Dr. Hodges. So what we initially recommended was 2 weeks to kind of start off with, but we have found that generally speaking, it needs to start probably at around a month. And the reason for this is we're gonna not recommend that you lift lockdown until it's been at least 2 weeks since the last person got out of quarantine and no new cases. And that's it's hard to set that up. A couple of the villages who have sort of achieved that, it's taken between 6 and 12 weeks to get there. And that's just because the virus is incredibly contagious and it goes from household to household like wildfire. And the hunker down and the shelter in place sort of interrupts that wildfire so that it stops spreading. And so it's important to keep that up. We know it's hard, we know it's difficult, but it's important to keep that vigilance up.
All right, so we have another question here. And this question looks like it's best suited for Vivian Corthius from ABCP. Do you know how many villages in the YK Delta are on lockdown because of COVID-19? And how do you track information about the protective measures that and travel restrictions that villages have put in place?
Hi, Tiffany, it's Vivian. Thank you for the question. So on the AVCP webpage, we have been tracking any of the declarations by our tribes in the region. If you go to the webpage, there is a listing of all the tribes and a copy of whatever declarations that they have published. So if there are tribes in our region that have not updated and changed their declarations, please send us a copy. And then to answer that question directly, as of today, through our tribal services office, we have contacted over the past week. We have tried to contact all of the tribes in the region. We have 48 villages that we have in our region. And as of today, 45 of the 48 villages have confirmed with us by telephone that they are in either lockdown, hunker down, or shelter in place. And then the three that we did not get answers from, those communities were not answering their phones. So we are assuming no one's in the office. So the other big thing that we learned today is that tribes are listening, and they are supporting the recommendations that have been placed by YKHC in the past week, and travel restrictions and wearing masks and social distancing, as well as the state. So that feedback from the tribes today was really important to us. So we want to share that with you now.
That was a portion of the virtual town hall hosted by the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation yesterday. The full town hall will be posted on the KYUK website today. Thanks for listening to Coffee at KYUK. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.